Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May the 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The African Union pushes for a coordinated response to the Sudan conflict as the warring parties say they are ready to hold peace talks.
The UN and partners are working around the clock to address the civilians' most urgent humanitarian needs. But in order to be able to do this, we need a permanent ceasefire.
Raila Odinga supporters say Kenyan riot police blocked them from protesting on Tuesday. The Ugandan parliament passes an anti-gay law for the second time on President Museveni's recommendation. A Ugandan cabinet minister is shot dead, allegedly by his bodyguard. A Burundi appeals court upholds a 10-year jail sentence for a female journalist as the Globe marks World Press Freedom Day today, Wednesday.
Freedom of the press is the foundation of democracy and justice. And as this year's theme reminds us, press freedom represents the very lifeblood of human rights. But in every corner of the world, freedom of the press is under attack.
And Nigerian women push for leadership positions in federal and state legislatures. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The African Union is calling for more pressure on Sudan's warring generals for a ceasefire and allowing humanitarian assistance. Miami Sika reports from the AU headquarters in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The African Union held an emergency meeting Tuesday calling for collective action on Sudan. The conflict between Sudan's army and the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, is in its third week with ongoing fighting, despite several agreements between the two for a ceasefire. African Union Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki Mohamed said there was no military solution for Sudan. I want to reiterate my call to international organizations and neighboring countries to help the Sudanese people who are in distress. The objective is to intensify the plea for the resumption of political process.
United Nations representatives joined those from the Intergovernmental Authority on Development trade bloc at the Tuesday emergency session at AU headquarters in Addis Ababa. UN Undersecretary General and Special Envoy to the Horn of Africa, Hanna Tete, said the humanitarian situation in Sudan remains a matter of deep concern.
The UN and partners are working around the clock to address the civilians' most urgent humanitarian needs. But in order to be able to do this, we need a permanent ceasefire.
Sudan's health ministry says the fighting has killed more than 500 people and wounded more than 4,000 since fighting broke out on April 15. The UN says the clashes have led to more than 100,000 people fleeing Sudan and more than 334,000 internally displaced. Maya Misika for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Sudan's warring parties say they are ready to hold peace talks at a venue to be agreed upon. South Sudan President Salva Kiir, who is the lead mediator for the regional bloc Intergovernmental Authority on Development, also known as IGAD, on the Sudan conflict, said Tuesday he spoke with Sudan Armed Forces leader Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah el-Burhan and Rapid Support Forces Commander General Mohamed Hamdani Daglo Himiti, and that both accepted to send representatives to the talks. Earlier, VOA Steve Miller spoke with Akmal Taha of Al Hurra's Radio Sawa program about the prospects for peace in Sudan.
I think there is a lot of results of this. Some from Egypt, and another one, it comes now, just now, from President of South Sudan, Salva Kiir Mayardit, asking about General Burhan and General Himiti to go in truce for 7 days to 12 days. The first reaction about this, the two generals, they are agreed about this, and also they are agreed to assign their people to go to Juba, the capital of South Sudan, to start a negotiation.
That's the Sudanese offer, but does that supersede another offer by Saudi Arabia and others to try to bring these parties together to broker a peace?
Actually, the offer by Saudi Arabia and U.S. also before this one, it comes like a lot of process come through that situation about Sudanese. In the vision now about that situation, about the people, about the humanitarian, very bad situation. People now, they looking for any way to stop or to make the ceasefire to stop for a long time. After that, they will talk about something peacefully or some negotiation.
You speak about trying to make this ceasefire hold. There was that new ceasefire that was brokered on Sunday night that was supposed to last for 72 hours. But here on Tuesday, we're already hearing reports of continued fighting.
The reports which come from the capital, Khartoum, there is a shooting. Actually, the shooting is now about to control the strategic places, you can say. The airport and the head of quarter for the army building, and also the palace for the president.
That was Akmal Taha of Al Hurrah Radio's Sawa program speaking with viewer Steve Miller. Ugandan lawmakers have passed a harsh anti-LGBTQ bill after minor changes if signed into law by President Yoweri Museveni. As expected, some same-sex acts could be punishable by the death penalty. Anyone found guilty of promoting homosexuality could also face up to 20 years in prison. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Uganda's parliament on Tuesday passed a modified version of the anti-homosexuality bill of 2023 with the support of 301 legislators and only a single dissenting vote. An earlier version of the bill passed in March was sent back to parliament by President Yoweri Museveni, who suggested three amendments. This included distinguishing between being a homosexual and actually engaging in same-sex acts. Museveni argued that the law needed to be clear so that what is being criminalized is not how the person identifies, but rather their actions and any promotion of homosexuality. The legislation mandates a life sentence for someone convicted of homosexuality. The president also argued against a clause penalizing property owners whose premises are used by gay or lesbian people, saying it presented constitutional challenges and would be problematic to enforce. Museveni's third recommendation was that mandating the public to report any same-sex acts should be restricted to cases involving children and vulnerable people. Failure to comply would fetch a jail sentence of 5 years. To ensure there was quorum, Speaker Anita Among took a roll call for members and closed the doors of parliament to ensure no one could leave.
Can we start the roll call? Go on a microphone and say aye or nay.
Speaker Mong asked legislators to remain steadfast in opposing homosexuality.
Let's protect Ugandans. Let's protect our values, our virtues. We have a culture to protect. The Western world will not come and rule Uganda. We may disagree, but we disagree respectfully.
Western medical and psychiatric associations regard sexual orientation as innate and part of normal human diversity. LGBTQ rights defenders say the proportion of sexual minorities remains constant from country to country, including those with punitive laws. Frank Mugisha, a gay rights lawyer and founder of a banned LGBTQ rights organization, Sexual Minorities Uganda, says Museveni's amendments make a bad bill worse. Condemning the bill, he said.
This bill increases the penalty for reporting from 3 to 5 years. And also this bill, yes, it doesn't criminalize the identity of identifying as an LGBTQ person, but in promotion, it's vague. If then someone identifies as LGBTQ person, would that be seen as promotion?
Legislator Fox Odoi Oyewelowo, who voted against the bill, said even with modifications, it will lead to abuse of the LGBTQ community. The bill awaits Museveni's signature, something he promised to do once Parliament considered his recommendations. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Ugandan police are investigating the shooting death of a cabinet minister on Tuesday, allegedly by his own bodyguard. Police say Charles Okello Angola, the state minister for labor, employment and industrial relations, was shot to death at close range on Tuesday morning while entering his vehicle to go to work. Here is police spokesperson Fred Enega.
This morning we registered a tragic incident that occurred in Chanja. And we'd like to confirm an unfortunate incident where the Minister of State for Labor, Employment and Industrial Relations, Honorable Retired Colonel Charles Okello Angola, was shot dead around 8 a.m. while entering his vehicle to go for work. And the shooting was done by one of his bodyguards at his residence in Chanja, who allegedly fired several shots at close range. And he fled from the scene up to the trading center at Chanja Ring Road, where he entered the saloon and also shot himself dead. The Deputy Inspector General Police, together with the Director CID, have responded to this incident. The investigation is currently in the early stages of review. We've also dispatched a team of crime scene experts who are using the most advanced forensic technology to get what exactly was the cause of this tragic murder. We don't want to speculate into what could be the motivation of this murder, but we just want to confirm this at this stage, that the Honorable Minister died at the scene. We are also trying to establish if there are any other bodyguards who could have been injured. Until we confirm how many more were injured, we shall be able to give you that information.
That was Ugandan police spokesperson Fred Enega. The audio was provided courtesy of crime reporter Kalungi Betty of Radio 4 in Uganda. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May the 3rd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. At least 67 journalists and media workers were killed last year, with most of the deaths being work-related, recording the highest number ever since 2018. This is according to the report by the Committee to Protect Journalists, which says the rise is due to the high number of journalists being killed while covering war in Ukraine and other killings happening in Latin America. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Press Freedom Day is celebrated on every 3rd of May as a reminder to governments of the need to respect their commitment to press freedom. It also reminds media professionals of the relationship between press freedom and professional ethics. According to the United Nations, for the past 3 decades, there has been significant progress towards achieving a free press and freedom of expression around the world. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says media freedom, the safety of journalists, and freedom of expression are increasingly under attack across the globe.
All our freedom depends on press freedom. Freedom of the press is the foundation of democracy and justice. It gives all of us the facts we need to shape opinions and speak truth to power. And as this year's theme reminds us, press freedom represents the very lifeblood of human rights. But in every corner of the world, freedom of the press is under attack. Truth is threatened by disinformation and hate speech seeking to blur the lines between fact and fiction, between science and conspiracy.
With this year's theme being shaping a future of rights, freedom of expression as a driver for all other human rights, the international community is faced with multiple crises, including conflict, persistent socioeconomic inequalities, driving migration, environmental crisis, and challenges to the health and well-being of people all around the world. Guterres says 3/4 of women journalists experience violence online and are threatened physically. There is other challenges as well.
The increased concentration of the media industry into the hands of a few, the financial collapse of scores of independent news organizations, and an increase of national laws and regulations that stifle journalists are further expanding censorship and threatening freedom of expression. Meanwhile, journalists and media workers are directly targeted on and offline as they carry out their vital work. They are routinely harassed, intimidated, detained, and imprisoned. On this and every World Press Freedom Day, the world must speak with one voice. stop the threats and attacks.
The Committee to Protect Journalists further highlighted in their report that at least 41 journalists and media workers were killed in direct connection with their vocation. Speaking at the UNESCO's World Press Freedom Day 2023 Academic Conference, the Agency Assistant Director General for Communication and Information, Tofik Jelasi, said that attacks on journalists are getting more complex despite efforts to help resolve issues surrounding their safety.
These academic efforts have over time significantly contributed to promoting freedom of expression, to defending freedom of expression, but also, of course, to fostering the safety of journalists. It is in this context that I also would like to appreciate the work and for your invaluable contribution to achieving the objectives of the United Nations Plan of Action on the safety of journalists and the issue of impunity for crimes committed against journalists.
In the African region, as of 2022, Eritrea and Egypt had the least amount of freedom of the press, as Seychelles and Namibia obtained the highest scores, showing a satisfactory situation. David Omoyo is the chief executive officer of the Media Council of Kenya.
The ranking of Africa and several countries in Africa and different press freedom indexes is directly proportional to the democratic levels of that country. Press freedom cannot be guaranteed in isolation. It's an entire democratic space. So you will notice then that in countries where the other freedoms do not exist, it is impossible for press freedom to exist.
Globally, the number of imprisoned journalists has risen in recent years, growing from 145 in 2010 to nearly 300 in 2021. Egypt is ranked among the countries with the most journalists in jail after China and Myanmar, according to the 2021 statistics. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
An appeals court in Burundi on Tuesday upheld a 10-year jail sentence for female journalist Florian Ivrangabiye. The government says she was arrested in August last year and convicted in January this year for undermining what they call the integrity of the national territory. She was also fined $482. The Committee to Protect Journalists says Ivrangabiye's sentence, coming a day before World Press Freedom Day today, Wednesday, illustrates the Burundian government's hostility toward dissenting views. Innocent Muhozi is the exiled director of TV Renaissance in Burundi. He tells me that Ivrangabiye's sentence shows that there is no freedom of press and expression in Burundi.
It's a heartbreak decision to see that lady have such kind of sentence, to stay in jail for 10 years for nothing, because she just expressed an opinion. And she went in Burundi thinking that there was nothing special, and seeing them pretend that she undermined the national security, it's just sadistic. It's a sad day, it's a sad decision that has been made by the appeal court, because there is not a single reason to do such kind of things to that lady.
The information we have also says that she was critical of the government on some social media.
A lot of people are critical of the government. Even inside Burundi, there are a lot of people who are very critical. It's just she's a lady, she has no special support, and some people just want to hurt her, as a woman, maybe also because of her ethnic group. But there is no reason to have such kind of behavior toward this lady. It's impossible to understand what's going on.
This decision is coming a day before World Press Freedom Day. What do you want to say about press freedom in Burundi?
You know, sometimes I wonder if some people are not sabotaging the government, because having this decision one day before the International Freedom of Press, you wonder why. There is no reason to do such kind of things. But it shows, by the way, that there is still a lot of people among the authorities who cannot tolerate a different opinion or expressing ideas or opinions that are not the same with their own. And just by doing this, you have such kind of risk to be in prison for 10 years or more or less. It shows there is no freedom of expression, there is no freedom of press in Burundi.
Thank you so much, as usual. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you very much, James. Thank you for what you're doing.
That was Innocent Muhozi, the exiled director of TV Renaissance in Burundi. Opposition leader Raila Odinga says Kenyan riot police prevented his supporters from exercising their constitutional right to protest. The accusation was made after the Azimio La Umoja party leader resumed demonstrations that had been suspended last month over the high cost of living and in support of other demands on President William Ruto's government. VOA's Africa correspondent Mariama Diallo has this report from Nairobi.
After a brief hiatus, anti-government demonstrations organized by opposition leader Raila Odinga resumed Tuesday in some parts of Kenya, including the capital, Nairobi. Odinga and his supporters say they had hoped President William Ruto's government would let them express their opinions through peaceful protest. Instead,
at the break of dawn, police got stationed in all parts of Nairobi metropolis and the city center to prevent us from proceeding with our peaceful protests as we had planned.
And it wasn't only the police that was unleashed, Martha Karua noted at a press conference held later in the day. Karua is a former justice minister who was also Odinga's running mate.
As we had earlier warned, hooligans hired by the Kenya Kwanza illegitimate regime were unleashed to cause mayhem and destroy property and blame it on our peaceful protests.
Odinga doesn't recognize Ruto's recent election victory, even after legal challenges by the veteran leader ended up with the Supreme Court deciding that Ruto had won. Karua said because of today's conditions, the Odinga camp was not able to present critical petitions to certain offices as planned.
We intended to present petitions to the IEBC, showing that the results it announced last August were doctored, and demand an audit of the servers. We also intended to petition office of the president, and I'm saying this very deliberately, the office of the president, with evidence that the costs of food, fuel, electricity, and fees remain unacceptably high. The third office we were to visit is the National Treasury, where we wanted to petition for the immediate release of all funds owed to counties and for the timely payment of salaries to all civil servants.
There was heavy police presence in many parts of the city, including in the Central Business District. Local reports show police firing tear gas to disperse a small crowd of protesters. Also, a minibus was set on fire. On Monday, during a speech on International Workers' Day, Ruto said he respects the opposition and acknowledged its right to protest.
But we also know what democracy looks like. We also know what human rights are. It is nothing to do with violence. It is nothing to do with anarchy. It is nothing to do with destruction of property and destruction of livelihoods and destruction of people's businesses. That is not democracy. That is not human rights.
Odinga has suspended protests last month, agreeing to dialogue with Ruto's camp, but he later said the government was not negotiating in good faith. Odinga supporters say they will protest again on Thursday. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Nigerian women are pushing for leadership positions in federal and state legislatures as the nation's 10th National Assembly is set to be inaugurated after the swearing-in of President-elect Bola Tinubu in June this year. A government-approved national gender policy, which preserves a percentage of top offices for women, has not been implemented, leaving them without any top positions in the country. Maureen Chigbo is president of the Guild of Corporate Online Publishers. She is also the publisher of Real News Magazine Online. Chibo tells viewers Chinedu Ofor that she is disappointed that after over six decades, Nigerian women are still struggling for political relevance.
Women have struggled over time to make progress, to make impact in all spheres of life, in the home mostly, in the economic area, in the informal sector. Women are there and they are powering the family, powering the economy. If you understand that in the informal sector, where they also dominate, that is the engine of any economy. So you know, can understand the role women are playing in the society. But that role has not translated to the political sphere. Politics women are still being relegated to the background.
That was Maureen Chigbo, president of the Guild of Corporate Online Publishers. She's also publisher of Real News Magazine Online. She spoke with viewers Chinedu Ofor from Lagos, Nigeria. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good World Press Freedom Day.